Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever-faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. And look, Taryn is here already. Yay!
Good
Hi, AJ.
Evening.
How are you?
Good. There were some
great
technical difficulties with Blog Talk. It told me that there was technical problems, and then it said, we're connecting you now. I was like, wait. Okay.
Oh.
But anyway, yeah, weird.
Hmm.
So, Jamie is under the weather, so we're without Jamie tonight. So we can jump right into things. Did you want to discuss Killing Eve at all, or you just want to talk about that with Jamie next week?
We can wait for Jamie. It was the season finale of season 3. And so we'll wait for Jamie because we can just talk a little bit about the episode and about our thoughts on the season, although I think we've been pretty clear that this is not our favorite season so far. But, the finale was pretty good. But, yeah, let's wait for her for next week.
Okie dokie.
And we'll just talk about the 100 and Snowpiercer, I guess, instead, huh?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. So we can talk about either
one. Like
two kind of. Well, how about Snowpiercer?
Okie dokie.
Okay.
So let me start by saying, after speaking with you last week, well, as we discussed Snowpiercer, Artie and I did watch the movie this past week.
Yeah,
and it's, first of all, it's amazing. but as far as the TV show, I feel like it's two different entities, you know?
Yep.
I feel like the movie, they stuck with the story, whereas the TV show is kind of taking the idea and expanding on it because you can do a lot more with something in in 10 episodes than you can in 2 hours.
Right.
So that being said, I feel like I'm looking at it as two different things, not really comparing the two or looking at the differences or changes. Especially because one of the biggest things is the movie takes place 17 years after boarding the train. This takes place 7 years after boarding the train. So
yeah.
Right off the bat, we've got some big differences. The character names are all completely different except for Wilford. So, I actually had a thought because in the movie, they say something about, this isn't the first insurgent. We had that incident about 10 years ago. So I'm almost wondering if they kind of took the idea for the TV show that this is actually something that happened before the events of the movie, which I think would be an interesting kind of take and twist. But, it's neither here nor there. It was just a thought I had.
It's neither here nor there. And now that you've seen the movie, that the ending of the movie, I wonder sometimes how this show could be going, if this show is going there. Of course, when the movie begins, you don't think that it's going to end where it ends, right?
Right.
It seems except that it's Boon Jong-ho, in the beginning it seems like a pretty, fast, straightforward, class war kind of a setup, right?
Yeah.
The movie's incredible, isn't it?
Yes.
And you wonder how Chris, what's his name, is he even got to be in that movie? The event,
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans is in it, right? Chris Evans is sort of this token movie star who's in this movie of mostly he's he's an Avenger. How did he get in that movie?
Writing.
I'm glad you guys watched it.
He's on a new show. He's broadening his horizons.
Yeah.
So, anyway, okay.
So back to this week's episode. I think since you brought up the movie, and what you just said, you can do a lot more in a whole show than you can in a 2-hour movie. I'm not sure if the show is better for that or suffering for that. Because we're getting into this, the whole murder case got a lot more complicated this week, right? And we sort of got deeper into the dark underbelly of second and third class. And, you know, I'm sort of less interested in that. Like, I get that we need to have a story to string the season and they're hoping multiple seasons together and give it something to hold on to. But, like, the really interesting part of this is the idea of all these people trapped together and the strict class system and sort of the real depressing idea that we, like, even at the end of the world, the rich are dominating the poor.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that part's really interesting to me. I thought this week was a little complicated with like all the drugs and all that. What did you think?
You know, for the most part, I felt I think the end, you know, they've introduced this murder mystery to it, and I feel like it's not what it looks like at the end of the episode. But at the same time, I was kind of like, well, that didn't last very long. Because, I mean, and it's been very obvious the whole time. Like, I'm sure you've noticed the girl from first class, and I don't know what he is, if he's a bodyguard or what his deal is. Every time, like, somebody will say something, they exchange these weird looks at each other.
The daughter in first class, that annoying rich lady's daughter?
Yeah. And the guy, you know, the guy with the crew cut we see at the end who's murdering everybody. And she seemed, and the daughter from first class, she knew that the girl was innocent. She's, you know, because the mother's like, oh, she killed somebody. Why is she here? And the daughter's immediately like, because she's innocent.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then she gives
that
guy a look.
That has not been, Yeah,
it's so obvious that it's obvious to me that they want it to be obvious for some reason. I'm just not sure what that reason is at the moment. It's all very convoluted.
Yeah, it is. I mean, again, I get that they have more time to fill. But the thing is, like, these, so far, everybody, like, most of the characters are not that interesting. So David Diggs, the main character, whose name is, the actor's name is David Diggs.
Andre.
I can't remember the character.
Yeah, Andre. Andre.
I mean, he's a character with a backstory and getting to be well realized. Most of the other characters, I know it's only episode 3, so they're not, there hasn't been time to really develop them. But everyone in first class, everyone on this train is a horrible, horrible person. Like, these are the people that survive. Everyone is a horrible person on this train except for the tailies. It's pretty black and white at this point. And I mean, of course, in the movie they were also, but it was a little bit of a different setup. I guess I got in the benefit of the doubt and give them some time to develop these people, but they're all uniformly horrible, and some of them are not. Okay, so the girl who is like the second class bartender or first class bartender, she's like an Asian American kind of character. I forget her name. And last week she had a drink with Jennifer Connelly, and this week she slept with the brakeman, the blonde brake woman.
Oh, the doctor.
She's a doctor? Okay. So she's a complete cipher at this point, right? And so she lets it slip in bed that the girl in the drawers is awake. I can't remember her name either. I want to call her Becky, the girl who they just woke up from the drawers.
So I
kind of wonder, like, she played it off like it was an accident, but it was a pretty huge mistake, right? And do you think she did it on purpose?
You know, there's so much subterfuge going on in the show, I can't say for sure. I kind of think it was an afterthought. Like, she mentioned it, and then afterwards, when she called Melanie, I feel like it was kind of like, and you know, I mean, you know, like I don't think she was. I think it was inadvertent, I guess maybe, or after the fact, she
yeah.
was like, "Oh, I probably shouldn't have said anything about that," type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, hard to say. I mean, it did come off as a mistake, as an accident. It surely
yeah.
did. It just seems like a really big accident. Although, I mean, it's hard to say because Melanie is a character that's completely inscrutable right now, and so you don't know. Like, she could be playing both sides of it, right? She acts like this cold bitch who's running the train, but we don't really have any insight into her character. And could she be playing both sides of it? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Melanie's deal is. I mean, she seems sympathetic at one moment, and the next minute she's very hardcore. You know, like every time somebody,
yeah.
you know, every time somebody's like, you know, like our whole problem can be solved by getting rid of the tailies. You know, like just cut the tailies loose, and that she's
yeah.
like, you know, she has this attitude of like, yeah, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to do that type of thing. Which is kind of interesting
yeah.
that she, you know, when you think about the grand scheme of things, you know, they're considered the lower class dregs, that they're, you know, they're stowaways that they get, you know, they're not even considered real people practically. And I'm surprised it's something they didn't do right away. Like, why let them stay? If they weren't supposed to be there in the first place, you know, what are they contributing? I mean, they're in the tail. What's in the tail other than the tailies? You know what I mean? It's not like it's storage for anything because you have a bunch of people living there. So
yeah,
it's
kind
it
was
of interesting,
interesting
to
that,
see why they never got rid of them in the first place.
Me too. And at one point in this episode, somebody says we need them for labor. And I don't know exactly what labor they are providing for the train. It does appear that they're truly a drain, being given food. And like, I'm not aware of any labor they perform on behalf of the rest of the train. Every once in a while, someone gets promoted because they need.
Well, the kid, yeah.
So the kids get promoted to apprentices because they need to train smart children to be engineers and other types of people. Allegedly, right? That supposedly is the reason. Although it all seems very sinister right now. And so they needed like David to be. They needed Andre to come up and be the cop. And his ex-wife is named Zara, and she
yeah.
appears to have been, it appears that she was called up, like, to be a prostitute. She was called up to be a sex worker.
I think
she's
really a
shrink. Clear the,
well,
she's
I,
a shrink,
I mean,
and they called her up
because
to actually be a shrink?
I got that feeling from the night, that night room or whatever the hell they call it, where, you know, she has that blue screen and then she plays whatever. And then she tells, you know, like when she did with Andre, she told him
yeah.
to close his eyes and think back for a moment. I mean, she had sex with Andre because she still loves him. You know, I don't think she
yeah.
normally had sex with people except for the
yeah,
guy
but,
that got killed because, you know, she was with him.
Yeah. So she helps people to, like, relive memories to get their mind off the train for a while, kind of, is what she does. It just
yeah.
seemed to me that when she got called up, I don't know. It's hard to understand. Yeah. Anyway, people every now and then get called up to provide a service. It's kind of surprising to me that they, I mean, the premise, the way they treat these people back there because they're stowaways, but they do have valuable skills, like more so than say like
right.
the brakemen do. It, I mean, as long as they were on, like the premise is the premise, but if you were running that train, wouldn't you be like, oh, a psychiatrist, yes, we could totally use you because you're also a medical doctor.
Right.
And a police officer, we never thought of having one on the train, like that they, I don't know. And the way they treat them is, but you're right. So someone at one point said, we need them for labor. I don't know if that means we need them, like, I don't know what that means because I don't see them providing any labor. It doesn't mean we need them eventually
yeah.
in 20 years. these people on this train also seem to believe that in 20 years the climate change is going to be over and they can get off this train somehow, which seems utterly ridiculous based on what we see out the window, right? Like an extinction level event happened and they think that they are going to, in their lifetimes, get off that train. At any rate, Jennifer Connelly refuses to cut it loose, and I feel like it was a little bit more out of a sense of humanity also, right? Like, she didn't want to cut mm-hmm. them loose because we need that, but I felt like she didn't want to murder, like, 400 people.
Yeah, I think there's more than that, because when Andre's talking to the janitor, he says something about third class and the tailies actually consist of 70% of the train.
Oh,
as far as
yeah.
population goes.
That's what he says. I didn't really catch that. So they're providing all the work to keep 30% of the train alive. Sounds a lot like normal society, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Where 70% of the people do all the work and 30% of the people are rich, except really, like, it's the 1%. So the 1% got to be 30% of the train.
Yeah.
But I feel like she's, so you think it's more than 400 people. We just see a certain number of people, but it's probably multiple cars back there that we just don't see. We just see the people who are the characters that we know in the tale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what was supposed to be in those cars that they were, I don't know what those cars were designed for when people jumped on them, but I guess cargo or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, I think Melanie maybe is a little bit of a nicer, okay, she's not nice, and she's definitely like a person who's like a very like, I mean, talk about like man of science, man of faith kind of setup. She's definitely the person who's like calculating every calorie and all this stuff, right, to keep them all alive.
Yeah.
And like that moment when she's like, I'm not going to kill all the, like, we're not cutting them loose, figure something out, is a little bit, I think it leaves for the audience an opening to see where she and Andre, where there's room over the course of a season or a couple of seasons for her and Andre to reach some sort of
understanding
or even a partnership. I mean, Den of Geek in their weekly reviews of the show, they're sort of looking at this as almost like a cop, like a, not like a buddy cop, like a buddy cop kind of show, right?
Like, I don't know about that.
Like,
I don't know that I call this buddy cop.
Yeah, but they're the only two people who appear to want to solve this murder, really. Maybe the head brakeman. Like the boss of the brakeman seems to be interested in solving the murder, maybe. Everybody else seems to find this to be a giant inconvenience and they don't really care that much. I mean, I guess if it's a serial killer, that would be bad to have a serial killer on the train.
Yes.
Although surely they'd be caught sooner or later. And it's amazing that the serial killer managed to wait like 6 years before they killed anyone.
No, it's 2 years. It's been 2 years since the last murder.
Oh, we're only 2 years onto this train?
Yeah. 2 years since the last.
Yeah, they've been on the train more than, they've been on the train 6 years. It's been 2 years since the last killing.
Yeah, that's what I just said there. But yeah, they've been on the train for 7 years, and the first murder was 2 years ago, and now another one.
So if it's a serial killer, they didn't kill someone for the first 5 years that anybody knew about.
Right. Yeah, what was that?
but anyway, I agree with you. It's not like a buddy comedy. And like, really, I guess Andre right now, he's paired up right now with the blonde woman, the blonde break woman, Kill, right? The one who was like a rookie cop when the end of the world came.
Yeah.
The blonde woman, they seem to be, she seems to be like sort of like a good cop. Like she's
yeah.
Maybe the only, she, really she and Melanie are the only people who care that the wrong person's in the drawers, right?
Well, she always felt like it was the wrong purse. Yeah, she was on the case when it happened, and she always felt like they had the wrong person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're the, I guess maybe I'm under, I didn't really read Den of Geek. I just saw, like, you know, sort of how they started it out. I guess maybe what, I don't want to misrepresent their articles, but it's Till who's like they're the partners. Till and Andre are partners. And
yeah.
Melanie is the boss. She's the person who got them into this. And you know, it's hard to say what Melanie's goal really is. Like, Melanie, like, when she didn't want to cut the tail loose, I felt like she might be a good person, but she also obviously is a suspicious person. I mean, within the three episodes of this show, I'm starting to wonder if Mr. Wilford even exists, or if Melanie is Mr. Wilford, right?
Well, I mean, at the end of the second episode, or the first episode, when the other engineer called her Mr. Wilford, you know,
yep.
And you see in this episode, when she's playing some words from Mr. Wilford, she's playing a recording, you know?
Right.
It's not like he's sitting there in the room with her.
Right.
So, you know, I actually, the movie came out in 2013. So I didn't want to spoil anybody, but I, you know, something you've seen The Prince of the Bride, obviously, and the character, the Dread Pirate Roberts, isn't the same person. Over time, other people take on the mantle. So I'm kind of wondering, because of that reveal in the first episode, if there was a Mr. Wilford and something happened to him in the past 7 years and he handed over being Mr. Wilford to Melanie. So I almost wonder if, you know, that type of thing where there was a Mr. Wilford, but he's dead, so you got to keep letting people think that that there is a Mr. Wilford, and people keep taking on the mantle to keep the train running.
Mm-hmm.
Or if she did something nefarious and took over the train for herself.
Well, yeah, there's that, right?
I don't know what benefit that would be. I mean, I think we're gonna find out that if Wilford is dead or something, it's gonna that she did it with good intentions. You know that. Because, I mean, could you imagine how much people would panic if they found out the creator of this brilliant train that's going to keep them alive is dead?
Yeah. And that this woman who they basically consider a concierge, that director of hospitality,
yeah.
She's basically the cruise director, right, is actually in charge of it. Yeah. I mean, it all hell would break loose, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. So I gotta say I didn't love the boxing match very much. I don't know. I felt like the boxing match was just like a little bit obvious, and the idea of like the rich people watching the lower class people like fight for a ticket up to second class, right? I don't know. It felt a little bit on the nose for me. I thought it was well shot in like an old movie kind of a way, right? But I don't know. I felt that was a little bit like on the nose, to the point that even the first class passengers say to Allison Wright's character, the second in command, Ruth, they say to Ruth, yeah, we totally know you're just trying to distract us from a murderer being on the train.
Yeah.
Even they know it's a little bit, right? I don't know. I just felt like a boxing match as a, like, poor people fighting each other for a chance to work their way up just seems like a very, I feel like I've seen that in like every movie about, I don't know. Like, didn't I see Tom Cruise in that movie once?
I was going to say, we've seen this all over the place. I've read this type of thing in books and a TV show. It's not anything new.
Yeah.
It's pretty commonplace,
yeah.
Actually.
Mm-hmm. So, so there's sort of a big ending, I think, to this episode, right? In the hospital car.
Yeah.
Actually, I just am looking at a headline, which this is an article I've not read, but the Guardian newspaper call Snowpiercer steampunk Law and Order. That's what it is, right?
that's a good
a good description.
Yeah. Oh, I know something I wanted to mention. That I so did you? He's only in it for like maybe 30 seconds. But given the caliber of his actorness, I gotta believe that he's gonna be have a bigger role to play at some point. Kellogg.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of the actor's name. Did you see him? Did you notice him in First Class?
No, he's in First Class, huh? He's got to be a bigger character.
Yep.
Kellogg from the guy who played Kellogg on Continuum.
Yes. He he was palling around with the Asian guy in First Class, and they were like right next to the First Class family that they've been focusing on.
Okay.
I only saw him for a split second, but for him to be in the show, I've got to believe that he's going to play somewhat of a bigger role. You don't get an actor, you know, a fairly well-known actor like that just for a quick cameo.
Yeah. 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 He's not yet being like a, basically almost like an extra. There's another actor I recognize. I don't know if I mentioned this last week. So when they are trying to repair the cattle car last week, there's a very kind of large man who says to Melanie how much he loves, like, you know, he's sort of a big sort of Russian guy who was, like, kind of excited.
Oh, yes.
Working
yes.
The, yeah. He's in that vampire show, Van Helsing. He's a main character in Van Helsing.
Okay.
And so, you know, I might be a little surprised if he did like a one scene gig on this show, unless, you know, you never know. Maybe he loves the movie and just wanted to be in one scene of the show or whatever. But I mean, he's a main character on another show and a guy who's working and a fairly recognizable actor whose name I can't remember. So not that recognizable. Anyway, so yeah, so at the end we get this business with the someone comes into the hospital car. I assume he beat the doctor, the creepy doctor, to death. Right? He looks like he's beaten a couple people to death. He beat them pretty severely. If he just wanted to knock them out, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
and
they're dead.
We don't,
I'm pretty sure those people
are
dead.
We don't see who those people are, but I think it's the creepo doctor, creepo drug dealing doc. I mean, not drug dealer. He didn't actually manufacture Cronol, but he sort of is responsible for it, right? And knows all about it. And someone else who was working in there. And then at the end, we see him come into, I can't remember her name. Laura, Becky, Rebecca. Anyway, the wrongly convicted woman, he comes into her room and that's when it ends, right? So we don't really know what.
And he says to her, he says, you don't remember me, but you know who I am. And then he unscrews the light bulb, and that's where it ends. Not sure what the deal with unscrewing the light bulb. I mean, if you're going to kill her, why do you, you need to do it in the dark?
Yeah, right? Like, if you're going to, like, you just beat two people to death violently without really seeming to have much fear of getting caught. So what's with the light? Yeah.
Yeah, not really sure what that was about, but.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know what that's about, but I guess that murder, she killed the person that she allegedly killed. They need, I mean, in order to prove her innocent, I mean, she's assumed innocent because of the second murder, not because of any way of, not because they have solved the first murder, right? She's just assumed innocent. So they're not really,
it's partially also because they know they did a shitty job the first time around.
Because they didn't really care that much. And they just, I mean, this is kind of a classic thing that we see on cop shows all the time and in real life all the time, maybe, is that they want to solve that murder and they just find someone and convict them because they really, what they want is first and second class to calm down. Right?
Yeah.
They don't really care about who got the guy who got killed or why. They just want
they just want this person to hurry up and solve this murder.
So I guess we'll, I mean, I would assume that should this get solved, it would be because Andre will eventually solve both murders, I guess, right?
Well, yeah. Well, you solve one, you solve the other, because it's pretty obvious that it's the same person considering the removal of the genitalia.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they know it's the same killer. Although there could be a copycat. Like, they're not really investigating. They seem to have dropped the idea that there's a copycat aboard. I mean, that was discussed early on, right? But there seems to not really be a feeling that, I don't know, they're not really talking about that so much. But it's not a copycat, because if it's a copycat, then it's not an interesting story, really, right?
Right.
I feel like
nobody knew about the missing penis in the first murder for there to be a copycat. I think I remember that being something that somebody pointed out, which is why they know it's not a copycat.
Yeah. And people seem to be, Nikki, that's the name of the girl in the drawers. People seem to be not that overly concerned about the cannibalism aspect also, which seems really wasn't really mentioned this week at all. It was very horrifying last week. So I don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, they're treating Andre really shitty. Like, despite the fact that he's an awesome cop and the only person who can solve this, and they probably needed a cop on this train from the minute they left the station, they still treat him like a prisoner of war. They hood him every time they take him somewhere, because now they know that he's trying to, like, get intel on the train, right? And they just generally treat him like a lower class person. It's going to be interesting next week when they find a whole bunch of more dead people. And now he's going to have to solve those murders also, right? Like, he needs some deputies. Yeah.
You know, I like, actually, is the fact that his little ploy to give information to the aliens didn't work. And that they realized what he was trying to do. I mean, within the first couple minutes of this episode, the one guy says to him, if we see you trying to pass information to your buddies again, he said, I'll knock you out myself or something like that. But I like that, because usually in shows like this, that's totally something that our hero gets away with and is successful. The fact that he wasn't successful, I kind of liked it, because it's not a normal. It's kind of more realistic, because some of these toys that they use sometimes. Of course, however, he was successful when he kissed what's her name there? Josie. And I knew that immediately. The minute I saw him kiss her, I was like, oh, he just passed her something around. Of course, what is that?
Well, yeah, so I didn't. So what that thing is, that is your access ID card in your wrist. So you'll see when people scan a doorway to go through, that's in their wrist.
Okay. That's what that is. So
that was from Sean Wise's arm. And Sean Wise was a second class passenger, right? Because he lived with Zara. They're in second class.
Yeah.
So for the tailies to have that, if someone could get out of the tail, they would have access to go through the door. If you could be, if you could have that and be somehow unnoticed, you could make your way up to second class.
Yeah.
Which would be very helpful.
Now that I know what that thing was, what he says makes a lot more sense, because as they're yanking him away, he's like, we're only doors apart. That was kind of a little more information for her there.
Yeah. He's basically telling her, you know, kind of what it is. I knew it because I didn't understand them to be a romantic couple. And when he kissed her, I was like, wait, why is he kissing her? Did I just miss that they were a romantic couple?
Well, Zara says to him when they first see each other again and they're arguing, and she's like, "You probably started banging Josie the minute I left." And he's like,
and he says,
"No,
no, we
not
didn't
like that." Yeah, he's
yeah.
like, "It's not like that." So, I mean, I feel like maybe Josie might have feelings for him, which is why she kind of seemed taken aback when he first kissed her, but she immediately was like, "He's sticking something in my mouth, and that's not his tongue."
Yeah, because either way, Jennifer Connelly doesn't know that they're not together, and she thinks
right.
it's just normal for them to be kissing.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't like it, but given that the movie... the movie's only 2 hours, and most of the movie is the Taileys fighting their way car by car towards the front. It's a big part of the movie. To have that access card would make a huge difference should someone be able to make their way up front. But knowing that, it's kind of interesting to me that it passed so freely back and forth. Like, it seems to me that thing would be incredibly more valuable than trading it for a little bit of Cronol or a blowjob or whatever we saw it. You know, we saw it pass through several, 5 or 6 people's hands, right? And it seems like an incredibly valuable thing. I mean, even if you already are a second-class passenger, you can pass unnoticed with that. No one will know, you know, if,
right.
I mean, let's say you're the killer.
Where you are.
You want to go through cars and you know, it's basically like a foolproof disguise.
Yeah.
It's what it is. So yep. it seems like it's worth more than what it passed for, but I mean, it's incredibly valuable in the tale. So that's interesting. And a couple more dead bodies is going to be interesting next week. Although, did you see the promo for next week?
No, I did not.
All right, so this pissed me off. Well, I mean, you and I feel kind of the same way about network promo departments sort of ruining stuff for the viewers sometimes, right? And so maybe you don't want me to tell you what the promo showed.
Oh, I don't care.
The promo shows... It shows Andre in a drawer all wired up, and they're about to close the drawer on him, and he's kind of yelling, like, don't do it. And I don't love that I saw that, because either Andre goes into a drawer, which, you know, would be bad, or do I just assume that's the promo department, like, playing with us? And, of course, there's no way Andre goes into a drawer. He's the main character. And, like, if he goes into a drawer, who else is going to step up and be the main character? Because it's Jennifer Connelly right now, who is way too undeveloped and icy, right? Like, there's no one, like, maybe I don't believe it's going to happen, and Jennifer Connelly will stop it at the last minute, Melanie, because what kind of a show do we have if Andre goes into a drawer?
Well, I think the bigger question is, why would Andre be going into a drawer in the first place? I almost wonder if he wants
yeah.
to see what it, if he wants... If he's not going to be what it looks like.
Well, there was that moment where Andre and Till are leaning over Nikki and talking to her, and Melanie, like, does not want this happening. And Nikki says, it's not like what they... She says something like, it's not what they say, or it's not like what they say. Like, and it made me think, like, God, maybe she's not in a coma that whole... Like, could she have been... That would be torture if you were, like, sort of awake and knew you were in a drawer. Not awake, but, you know... If you're not in, like, a medically induced coma, then
right.
that's torture.
Yeah.
But do you remember that? She said something like that, it's not what they say, or it's not like they... I forget exactly
yeah,
what
I
the words
remember.
Were, but... So, I mean, so, yeah, you're making me think of that when you say maybe Andre just wants to test it out or see what it's like, or...
not what it seems.
Yeah. So, all right, so next week will be week 4. We'll be halfway through the series season. We'll have to start getting...
10 episodes.
Oh, there's 10? Oh, I thought there was 8. Okay.
Yeah.
One last thing. We cannot let a week go by without saying how much we love Allison Wright as Ruth in this show. And now that you've seen the movie, so Ruth is the Tilda Swinton character, right?
Well, you know what? I think that the Tilda Swinton character, I think they split her up. I think Ruth and Melanie are the Tilda Swinton character. I think they split that character in half.
Yeah, because the Tilda Swinton character has a little more authority than Ruth. Ruth doesn't really have authority.
Yeah.
Ruth is like truly a cruise director kind of person.
Yeah.
I really love her character. I can't believe how much, to me, Allison Wright looks so much younger in this role than she did as Martha on The Americans.
She does.
Which was, right?
She does.
And The Americans came on the air probably like 10 years ago now, right?
Well, you know what, you got to remember that The Americans, they dressed everything up to look very 80s, so it was totally different. You know, and it's ironic because, you know, for a dark show like this, it's very brightly lit because who wants to be on a dim and dark train when all this crap's going on?
And on The Americans, I think Martha was maybe supposed to be a little bit frumpy and
I think she was
targeted by Clark that he would romance her and like sort of sweep her off her feet, and she was like a little bit of a frumpy but she looked so much old. I mean, this wig they've got on her and her makeup, she just looks so much younger. And you say it's brightly lit, but she's sort of like a brightly lit character. Like, she's Miss Perky, like, happy. I loved when she was talking about Fight Night, and she's like, oh, it was a great success. She's like, oh, it was a great success, despite the riot, or maybe because of the riot. Like, she, she's basically saying the riot was the highlight of the evening. I just thought she was really, really entertaining.
Yeah,
I think she's really good.
So.
Yeah.
All right. We'll try again next week. On to the 100. So what did you think?
I'm sorry, I lost you for a second there.
The 100. What did you think about it?
Wait, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hang on. Oh, I accidentally turned my volume all the way off. Sorry. Sorry about that. Okay, so now we'll go on to
the 100.
Yeah, to the 100. Okay, so what did you think about this episode?
Well, that's what I said. I said that's what you thought. You just didn't hear me.
Okay. All right, so let me pay attention to what I'm doing here. So this was kind of a weird episode told almost entirely in flashback, which is a weird flat time traveling, space traveling flashback.
Yeah.
Like at the whole beginning of, I really didn't like the beginning part of this episode because I just felt like I was getting all this dumped on me so fast, like backstory, Hope's entire life, basically all of this. Plus, like, I continue to be irritated that we're now asked to accept Yoza as Octavia's best friend. Like, right? Like, Octavia's a horrible terrorist who blew people up and killed them, had a baby with a, like, very violent, like, was having a relationship with this horrible man, like, brought about, like, is largely responsible for Earth being uninhabitable. I mean, you could say that Octavia's responsible, but whatever. And like, they moved her to being this, like, good person last year, and now she's totally a good person and Octavia's best friend. And that, like, I don't know. I mean, should I be easier on these characters that it's the end of humanity and, like, give them a break and let them be redeemed? I don't know, but she's like this Earth mother in this episode, right? Who's now counseling Octavia, like, I don't know. The whole beginning part of it bothered me, and I don't really like Hope very much. And I do think that this show is suffering a little bit by separating Octavia from the rest of the characters. It's been around for like 3 seasons now that Octavia is separated from the group. And so I didn't really like all that. But by the second half of the episode, it became more coherent to me. And I became a little bit, I mean, I'm definitely invested in Octavia trying to get back to Bellamy. They seem to have brought Octavia full circle. She's redeemed now. Like, she's writing notes to Bellamy being like, you were right to leave me. So they have finished Octavia's redemption arc. And I'm okay with that because she was always, like, our favorite character, right?
I agree mostly with you. Idioza is just, you know, I mean, I can understand why she's Octavia's best friend. She doesn't have any other options.
Well, because she's the only other person who's alive.
She's the only other person there. So I get that part. And I, you know what, I don't really, you know, it was actually funny because when it looked like, when she gave birth, and I was like, oh, good, I thought she died. When she passed out, I thought she died. I was like, oh, yes, we don't have to put up with Dioza at all. It's going to turn out that Octavia raised hope, blah, blah, blah. And then we found out she's alive. I was like, God damn it. I was like, that's no good. So I wasn't happy about that.
Yeah. I am.
But I like I like the story. I like the story they gave us. I actually, there was, you know, other than Dioza, I had no complaints about the episode. Just like you, you know, we used to complain, you know, can you, you know, with the time left, can you bring Octavia back? You know, they ruined her character. But I like what they've done because of the time fluctuation between Sanctuary and Beta. You know, she's had the time to reflect and realize the mistakes she's made, you know, and she is redeemable, you know. You know, and it's not just because we loved Octavia way back when. It's because her story actually makes sense, and it's believable that she's redeemed herself after all that. You know what I mean? So I can be okay with that.
Well, I mean, so I agree with you, particularly in light of...
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go finish what you're saying. I'm sorry.
That's all right. So, but what I like is I wish we had this story last season. I mean, so far I like what they're doing with the anomaly. If we had had this story last year instead of the stupid Prime storyline, which was just a regurgitated mess of previous storylines, I think I would have liked, I mean, I still don't know how this is going to play out, obviously, but from what they're giving me so far, because this is a little different. This is kind of giving us more story about the overall story, because, I mean, it turns out that this whole thing with, what's her name, the doctor there that created this big mess, inadvertently.
Becca?
Allie's created.
Allie.
Becca, yes.
Becca.
So I feel, you know, we're kind of getting all this backstory and finding out more about all this and everything. And that's interesting to me. So if we'd gotten this last season instead of the Primes, I think that it would have been a lot stronger because, like, you know, we both complained about the Primes all last season. It's just a redo of the same shit we've been doing, you know? I mean, who knows? They could screw this up too, but I like, you know, is it perfect? No. But I'm intrigued by the story itself.
I agree with you. So yeah, I don't like the story of I didn't like the Primes at all. You and I both hated that storyline. I don't love that they found a mind drive in this episode because I feel like, can we please, I just want to be done with the flame and the mind drives and all this. But now, of course, Allegis 3 crashed on here and, like, I guess they're trying to make a mythology. I mean, not trying to. They are. It's a mythology on this show. I just, like, this was not that show. I'm just not that interested. Like, I want that to kind of be over. I mean, I appreciate the way they worked it out this episode, that Gabriel would use that mind drive to figure out the code, and it was necessary. But I feel like, can we just, the flame is gone. Can we kill Russell and be done with the mind drives? But it's paying off a little bit with Gabriel. I have to really think about, as I watch the show, I think Octavia's redemption, which I mean, there was a time 2 episodes ago when you and I thought it wasn't possible and that Octavia was totally ruined. And how does Octavia come back from the cat? She's like, they brought her back from cannibalism. Like, she ordered her people to become cannibals. And
yeah.
And we're saying she's redeemed and we like her again. It helps that she basically spent 10 years in prison. This planet, we know, is a prison, right? Skyring is a prison. I don't like Bardo. I'm not sure what's up with Bardo. But Bardo is using Skyring as a prison. And Octavia spent 10 years in prison, and she's had 10 years to, like, when she comes back to Clark and Bellamy, she will have basically served a sentence for her crimes.
I guess
I got to consider why I can accept that from her. And another one of my hated characters in the past was Echo, right? Echo was horrible, horrible character. And I guess Echo just kind of wore me down, and I've just come to accept her. But why I can't do the same for Dioza. Like, Dioza also has spent 10 years in prison with Octavia.
Yeah, but screw Dioza.
I guess
Dioza's a much worse person.
Yeah. Dioza's a much worse person,
Echo,
and
I mean,
they already...
Echo, you know,
well,
at least she makes sense, and part of the reason she is the person she is now is because of Bellamy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she spent 6 years in the Ark with Bellamy.
Echo has quite, you know, quite a good, you know, pretty good story arc. You know, I mean, you know, first when Bellamy rescues her from the cage on Mount Winter, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, so she, her story, I mean, everything about Echo always made sense to me. I always understood her motivations, wrong or not, you know?
Yeah.
She made sense.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. And she had this,
awful,
like, formative experience as a child that kind of made her what she is. And, yeah, Dioza chose to become who she did in a way that Echo really didn't, right? And that Octavia kind of really didn't. Octavia's had these very Octavia's been traumatized ever since she was forced to live under the floor, right? I guess Dioza, I don't know. I agree with you. I just can't.
Yeah,
Dioza is a much worse person, and I also don't like the, I feel like the writers forced Dioza down my throat last season in a way they didn't with Octavia. Octavia was, they gave Octavia this storyline where she really suffered after, you know, realizing who she'd become and what she'd done, and then she was ostracized, and whereas I felt the idea was sort of shoved down our throats, like, you need to, we've made her a good character, now you got to accept her.
I understand, you know, we got the little bit of Dioza's backstory that we have. I understand that the corporations were criminal and she was fighting for the people, but, you know, we talked about this with Liberate on, Continuum. You know, we believed in what they were fighting for, but their methods were the problem. Same could be said for Dioza, but her methods got thousands of innocent people killed. I mean, she bombed a building.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sorry, there's just no coming back from that. I don't care what she's been through or how long she's been on the prison island. Or planet, whatever the hell it is.
Huh?
Did you not hear what I said?
I forget. I didn't really catch what you were saying there at the end.
Oh. I said, I don't care how long she's been on the prison planet. There's just that you can't excuse anything she's done. She's not allowed to be redeemed.
No,
you know?
She was a terrorist. Yeah, she's not. While Octavia became a horrible authoritarian leader, she I mean, she did believe she was responsible for the last, like, 400 humans in the universe, right? And she did some horrible things, but I do think Dio's is a far, far worse person. And her redemption, I don't feel, is earned in the way Octavius is.
Well, that's just the thing. There's no redemption for Geosin. There can't be. There's nothing redeemable about her.
Yeah. There's not. For Geosin and Octavia to be raising a child, like, I guess I can appreciate Dioza, like, seeing in Octavia a good co-parent and a good role model and things that her daughter needs from Octavia, right? But I don't. I mean, maybe it would have helped me to see the 3 months when Dioza was alone. Like, did she have personal growth then? I don't know. But I do see that. I don't.
At least not for me.
I don't really. I mean, I don't also love how Dioza, how she won't let Octavia get back to Bellamy. Like, Octavia is, I mean, she's really, like, desperate to get to Bellamy, right? And I think, like, for Dioza to not, like, if you're unable to understand, like Bellamy's not just her brother. Bellamy, like, kind of raised her, right?
Yeah.
And for Dioza to, like, constantly belittle that and like to take that away from Octavia when she has the suit, I felt was really not the. So there's not a romantic relationship between these two, but they're definitely co-parents. Yeah. They're definitely a team. They're definitely, like, you know, together because they're the only people. And I just felt like if they're supposed to be best friends, I felt like Dioza was kind of selfish. I mean, I know that.
Oh, absolutely.
I know that she doesn't want to be alone and she feels like she needs a co-parent there, but I thought it was incredibly selfish and really mean to from the jump to just not understand or even try to understand why Octavia wants this, needs this. I mean, Octavia also has unfinished business with Bellamy, right? Like, Dioza keeps saying, oh, he left you. Like, Bellamy did something really horrible. I mean, it wasn't great, but Octavia had really gone. Octavia was irredeemable, maybe, at that point, right?
Actually, Bellamy was willing to kill her at one point.
Yeah.
She became.
Mm-hmm. Octavia has unfinished business and can never really be happy until that's settled. And so, like Dioza was making me mad, denying Octavia, like, what she really needs. And so, yeah, that really, I mean, and Octavia's, like, this redemption arc of hers, really, the character's arc can't be completed until she's reunited with Bellamy and is able to, like, if Octavia should die and not have resolution with Bellamy, that would be a horrible ending to this show. Right?
Yeah. Well,
and also,
it all makes, you know, I mean, I completely get why she, you know, wants to get back with Bellamy because she needs him to know that she understands everything. You know, like, she desperately, it's like the rest of her redemption. She needs him to know that she understands and that she forgives him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and she can't be redeemed. Like, it's not enough for her to know. Like, are you redeemed just because you know you've changed? No, she needs him to know that she understands everything.
Right. And it's not even, and I don't feel like it's not even for her. It's for him, you know? She needs him to know that he did right. You know, like, she didn't want him. I you know, that's at least how it's coming up to me, is that she needs him to know that he was right. You know, that,
yeah.
That she's forgiven him and she doesn't blame him and that he did, you know, Because that'll help.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because think about it. Bellamy's always, you know, still, you know, always struggled with this. And still, you know, I mean, well, for him, it hasn't been that long because, you know, it hasn't been. Time's different.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. So I do want to talk about the other part of the story, but it's interesting how this show has really changed its main characters. So this was about, like, young people. This was like a YA, maybe not YA, but it was like a young adult-centered show. Everyone was under 18, right? You were kept in, if you were under 18 when you committed a crime, you went into the prison, and then they get sent to the ground. And they're
right.
All, like, maybe under 18 when the show starts. The last two seasons, it's interesting to me how they have really, both Clark and now Octavia, have had their storylines and character arcs advanced by raising children sort of off screen, right? Like Clark raised Maddie for 5 or 6 years while everyone was underground in the bunker. And
right.
It was only Clark and Maddie were the only people. And now Octavia and Dioza co-raise Hope for 10 years, sort of off screen while everyone else is doing whatever in Sanctum, right?
You know, until you just said that, I didn't realize they just regurgitated another storyline. I didn't even think about that.
They did. Yeah. Yeah.
No
originality. I mean, they brought both of those women back from the sins that they committed in the name of their people by having them raise children. It's sort of, it's a little bit of like soap opera rapid aging syndrome, where one day the character is like a new actress and she's 18. And, you know, a new season starts. And bingo, they raised a child in the off season, and now they're a mature, different kind of a person with a different perspective. I'm not saying I hate it, but it's, you know, and you know, Bellamy is a little bit different. He raised Octavia after their mother was floated.
Right.
It's a little bit of a different, he always was a big brother. I don't really see him as a father figure in the way these two women are mothers. Worst part of the episode for me. Okay. So we have this whole other thing going on where Echo and Gabriel and Hope come back and, you know, they're on this planet. They think maybe Bellamy's there. And there's this guy has gone crazy from being there by himself, right? So basically when they send you, when the, whatever they're called, the Avengers, those guys that, the apostles, whatever they're called, those guys with the masks on.
Yeah.
I forget what they're called.
I don't remember either.
When they send you to Skyring, to a prison, it's basically solitary confinement, apparently, it looks like, right? Because this guy has been there by himself for, he's sentenced for 5 years, and he's clearly gone insane from being there by himself. Which I guess would have been the fate of Dioza had Octavia not come behind her. I don't know. So I thought the worst part of the episode was when he grabbed the Becca iPad and smash it on the floor. Like, that was so obviously coming, right? Like, I thought that was a little, yeah. I thought that was a little too easy and a little too obvious, whoever this guy is. I don't know. What'd you think about that? Also, there has been another.
Because it was obvious.
You
knew it was going to happen.
And there seems to have been another, so whoever taught Hope to fight was another prisoner who was sent there that spent some time there. She's very sad that his body's been dug up. Hope is about 20 years old now, maybe. It's not clear to me if this was a father figure or a romantic person in her life, right?
I've got to believe father figure, considering the fact that it was a prisoner and she was like eight.
Well, if he came when she was 8, maybe he just came 3 years ago when she was 17, right? We don't really know.
Okay, maybe. Yeah, okay, I got you there.
Right? We don't know when
that person
came. Although, so now that I think about it, you're right. Maybe he came when she was young, because how could she have survived by herself all those years without, like, I mean, she's a little kid.
But then again, Octavia was teaching her how to live off the land and shit, so who knows?
Yeah. Who knows about that? I'm interested to learn. So you and I watch a lot of time travel shows, right? And we learned that because they are so close to the black hole, time dilation is the reason why time passes so fast on Skyrim. So in the time that Hope comes through the anomaly, she spends like a day or two with running around chasing Gabriel and Echo around or whatever. They go back through, and now it appears, I'm not sure how much time has gone. A lot of time, but not, it's not like hundreds of years, because those bodies that were dug up to play chess together, that the weirdo prisoner dug up, they're not like pure skeletons, right? They look like, I mean, they look like they are not totally decomposed to me. Like, those didn't look like hundreds of year old bodies. I don't know. Like, anyway, I'm trying to get a handle on how much time passes when they go in there, how fast time moves, because, like, will they come back? They'll come back and be, and only a day has gone by on Sanctum, but it's interesting that Octavia doesn't look to have aged 10 years, right? She's been there 10 years. She doesn't actually look 10 years older. Hope definitely looks 10 years older. I'm not sure if the same amount of time, I guess what I'm getting at, is it constant, the amount of time? Like, we know that one day is 10 years, or is it more fluid than that and you don't really know when you're going to show up on the other side and what time it'll be and whatever, right?
Right.
Well,
we know about 2 minutes is 3 months. So.
Yeah. Yes, we know that. Because Octavia was right behind Eosa. Yeah. I'd like to know what the rules are for this show. You and I watch a lot of these time travel shows, and we're big on, like, what are the rules? And so I'd like the anomaly. I'm not actually a huge fan of this anomaly storyline. I'm more comfortable with time travel than... So last season had a lot of sort of mystical mumbo-jumbo attached to it. I am more comfortable with time travel. I'd like to learn a little bit more why everyone tattooed things all over their body and the code and all that, and what that means, because that's a little bit... I don't know. I just like to know what the rules are, right? Like, we're always asking for rules. I like that the anomaly is now being described as a bridge. I think that is helping to define what it is that we're talking about.
Well, yeah, because I mean, and then, you know, it's like a UFO. A UFO is only a UFO, and so it is. That's identified.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Anomaly. And there seem to be a whole bunch of different ways that you could. So there's that sort of like that sculpture looking thing that was in Gabriel's basement and also in Hope's basement that allows you to use the anomaly, but it also might just turn green in the woods and you just run right into it, right? So there's that. And then we also don't know how the disciples or the apostles or how the helmet guys use it, right?
Right.
The disciples, that's what they're called, right? I'd also like to know, one thing that's a big mystery is, so we saw when Hope was a little girl that Dioza and Octavia get kidnapped and taken away and allegedly taken to Bardo. But now grown up Hope, remember she stabbed Octavia because she had to, like, she made a deal to get her mother back. So somehow,
yeah,
right. So somehow Hope has learned a lot more about all this. And so I guess we're going to get another flashback story about this guy, Dev, and what he told her, because she seems to know an awful lot more than she's letting on. She knows a lot about these guys, and she has somehow cut a deal, somehow in between them, Dio's and Octavia getting kidnapped and these guys not knowing Hope is alive. Now they've cut a deal with her to get Octavia back.
Right.
There's a way complicated thing going on here that's probably going to take a couple episodes to figure out. So, So we'll have plenty of time. This is like a 13 or 15 episodes, right? So we have plenty of time to...
We were complaining. 16.
Yeah. So that means we have 14 more. So there's plenty of time to figure it out. And we're going to need it because it looks like this is going to be one of it looks like we're going to have at least several episodes where we go back and forth. Like, I'd expect next week to be a Sanctum episode. And, well, the promo was for a Sanctum episode, and we're going to see all this baloney with where we left off. We left off, Clark announced that Russell would be killed tomorrow, which is so stupid. AJ, when you and I get transported to a planet and there's someone who needs to be killed, let's agree that we'll just kill him and not put it off till tomorrow.
Okay.
Because
I'm down with that.
No good obviously is going to come from leaving Russell alive.
No, we won't do that.
Any longer than necessary. So I guess that'll be next week, and we'll probably have alternating every other week for a little while until our characters are reunited. And we all know how much we love that. But, I mean, I guess if there's one good thing, it's that Jamie's not watching the show because Jamie hates it more than anyone. So, anyway, I guess, have we thoroughly dissected this one, too? I think maybe I lost AJ. I don't hear anything. Or maybe AJ lost me.
Oh,
there you are.
I thought, yeah, what happened? I just heard
I didn't hear you.
Said something about Jamie, and then it was silent.
Oh, and then okay, so I didn't hear you either. I was saying, I said it's a good thing Jamie's not watching, because Jamie, more than anyone, Jamie hates these situations where your characters are separated from each other, and you have like every other week where you don't see half your cast.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So,
all right. So we'll be back next week with these two shows. That's it, right? Nothing new coming on next week.
We had a lot to talk about, apparently.
Well, maybe we're better off with
fewer
shows to talk about.
Same three shows. Well, you and I tend to carry on a little bit when it's just the two of us.
We do. So we're better off with a fewer shows. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Well, you have a good week.
Do it again next week.
All right.
You too. All right.
Thank
you, everybody, for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
And good night.
Good night.